I think we're all defined by certain moments in our life. Many things happen to you, but that is the defining moment, obviously, when 17 people before me had got 100-100s in test matches. Nobody had ever done it in a test match, the actual one. I remember John Edrich telling me he got his 100th 100. He said he against Derbyshire, it was a cold, horrible day, hardly anybody there. And so it takes away from the moment, doesn't it? And I suppose I was lucky, partly good enough, to do it in a test match against Australia, which is the old enemy, to do it at home, at Headingley, in front of a home crowd, lots of pressure. But it happened, and don't ask me how or why. England have had Wally Hammond, Len Hutton, Dennis Compton, Jacobs, W.G. Grace, go on, better than me. And they didn't do it, I did. But see, it's just one of those magical moments.
And I know you're always spoken about being in the moment and being completely focused on what you're doing in the here and now. So when you scored your 99th 100, you didn't actually realise where the next game was.
No, I'd had so much pressure coming back to Test cricket at Trent Bridge. I'd been my choice out for 3 years. I knew I was under serious pressure playing against Australia at Nottingham. People wondering if at 36, nearly 37, I'd have still got it. I'd have lost it. Was I any good against the Quicks, Thompson and Pascoe? So, yeah, all that. I succeeded and got through it, got 100. We won the Test match. I was elated. I mean, it's like a big sack of coal off your back. So 3 days off and then went to Edgbaston. We played a rain-ruined match, Yorkshire versus Warwickshire. Unfortunately, we couldn't do anything. Rain interrupted it a lot. I got 100. Okay, I got a lot of 100. So it wasn't big in my life in a rain-ruined match. Nothing at stake. I was feeling obviously pleased after getting through Nottingham, but when I rang Rachel that night and she said, "Oh, you've done it now." I said, "Done what?" And she told me it'd been all over the news. He's got his 99th 100, he'll get his 100 at Headingley. I thought, "Oh, no, I don't need any more pressure." I mean, I've even got more pressure now. Everybody's thinking, "You're going to get one." I mean, getting hundreds, you know, I got a lot, but getting them in test matches is harder. Getting them when it matters, in front of your own crowd, it just adds and adds. And yeah, it was a special moment because there's so many things like that. And I've always believed that cricket is such a lovely game because it breeds character. You can have talent. How many kids do you know growing up? You said, "Oh, he had wonderful talent. If only. If only he'd have had concentration. If only he'd have practiced. If only." Well, if my auntie had had balls, she'd be my uncle, wouldn't we? If don't count. It's really, you know, can you do it? Have you got all those characteristics besides talent? So, yeah, I was very pleased with Nottingham and pleased with Headingley. It brought out all the facets of character that is needed in cricket besides talent.
Now, you've spoken about your 100th century as an iconic innings and one of the highlights of your career. I guess a bittersweet memory for you was your highest scoring test match cricket, 246 out against India. A tremendous achievement, but not fully recognised at the time.
Well, the chairman of selectors, Doug Insole, I should have spelt his name with an A, he had this idea about brighter cricket. He'd already dropped Kenny Barrington 2 years before in 1965 against New Zealand at Edgbaston for supposed a slow 100. And he did it to me. And we won the match. That's the most important. If batting slowly affects the game, so you don't win, then you're entitled to be getting a slap on the wrist or a reprimand or something, because it's an individual game within a team framework. It is an individual, but it's still within a framework. That's what makes it unique. So, but we didn't. We won the game by 6 wickets. And on top of that, I took no notice of the fact that it was a very wet summer for the start of for Yorkshire season, which sometimes it is in the north. And we played on all these 8 pitches, club pitches, you know. And I think I got my first pair. I got another naught. I got so many low scores, I got 150, 100 and about 10 failures. And I was really struggling. struggling for form, and the only way I could get out of it was to stay in. And I grafted my way the first day for 100, and the second day I got 100 and nearly 140 in 3 hours and made up for it. But he just had this bright idea and dropped me. That was probably the lowest moment of my career, because I think doing that, it stuck with some people, and it was a stick to beat me with. Whenever they wanted to be critical or bring that up, whenever they say, oh, well, he didn't score quickly, they forget the good innings where I did and won matches for Yorkshire and England. And so I find it hard to forget about that and forget him. Forgive him? I don't know.
Now, you actually averaged 100 twice in your career. In those seasons, do you feel like what it must have been like to be like Don Bradman?
Oh, yes. It's the only time in my life where I've had a glimmer of a sight of what it must have been like for Bradman, who was, look, some people are great, some are world-class, he was just a genius, a one-off. And, I mean, he was just every time I went in, I almost got runs. And almost within a few overs of being in the middle batting, I thought, I'd think, oh, I get 100 here. I mean, the first year I did it, 71, I regard as the best, because we were still playing on uncovered pitches. So with the vagaries of the English weather, and particularly northern weather, half your matches at home, you got all sorts of pitches. And we still did have overseas players playing. I mean, Mike Proctor played and people. So to get it on uncovered pitches, that was pretty special, I thought. I think I got 1,300s in 25 completed innings. And I'm, you know, playing like Bradman. Wow. I mean, almost, I talked to Bill Bowes, people. I talked to Maurice Leyland when they were alive, and Arthur Booth, and said, Bradman, what was he like? I talked to Aussies, Neil Harvey in Australia. I talked to a number of those. And the great fast bowler, Lynmore. I talked to Miller and asked him about Bradman, because he was a genius. And they just said, they told me all sorts of things. Whatever you bowled, he scored where there was a gap. I said, really? He said, yeah, you move a fielder and to the offside. And so he did it on the leg side. And he didn't whack fours all the time. People think he played like 20-20 cricket. He didn't. He just scored off the bowling. If there were only singles, he just scored. And it was almost nearly impossible to stop him from scoring. And then the other factor is he had the concentration, the patience, the determination to keep batting for long periods. So he made doubles and trebles and put the game beyond the opposition. And that was why Douglas Jardine created Bodyline to cut him down to size, because he felt a guy who was averaging 100 and plus every innings means the opposition are going to score big. It's very difficult to beat them. So you have to cut him down to size, because if you can cut him down, you can cut the others. And it worked.
Now, many observers say that Michael Holding bowled the fastest ever over in Test cricket against you in 1981. What people often forget is that in the very next Test innings, you scored an unbeaten century. Where does that rank? Is that one of the best centuries you've ever scored, 104 out at Antigua?
Again, it's how do you define best? The guy's got you out for 0-1, front of full house, people jumping up and down and falling off the vantage points on top of stands and palm trees and loving it, because they're all West Indians nearly. So it's a pretty rock-bottom moment. And you have to go and play against him and the other fast bowlers 3 days later. Oh, there's no escape. In the week off, go and play a practice match, you know, and play a couple of county matches. No. So, again, best, again, it's about character, isn't it? Determination, character. And, yes, it ranks high from that point of view. Do you determine innings as by how many fours you hit, how many sixes, how many caressed cover drives that are elegant and pleasing on the eye, or do you regard it as a challenge? And I regard it as a terrific performance for me, because it was a challenge. It was a huge challenge of the mind. If you've been blown away for 0-1 and they've won the test as well, they've blown away most of the team of the West Indies, so then you've got to play them again. It's a big challenge of the mind more than anything. Your courage, your mind, are you strong enough? And I succeeded, so I'm pretty pleased about that.
Well, you're going to be reflecting on your 100th century and also highlights of your career in a series of one-man shows. You're also going to be alongside Jonathan Aggers as part of the Boykes and Aggers tour. You're going to be in Bradford, Stafford, Bath, Northampton, Preston, Salford, Richmond, Crawley, Wolverhampton, Swindon, Weston-super-Mare, St Ives and Cheltenham. You're going to be busy. And, of course, the question is Aggers going to be on better form in the tour than he was when he bowled at you?
Well, I hope he's the same sort of person he is when he bowled at me, because he bowled lovely bowling. Hit the middle of my bat regularly, I tell him. He was a lovely bowler.
Now, a couple of years ago, you gave a talk on the Cowdrey Lecture where you recommended some innovations in cricket. Some of those are coming in now, like overnight cricket, coloured clothing, faster-paced, franchise sports as well. And I know that they're some of the things that you're going to be exploring on the tour as well, but people can also put their questions to you.
Yeah, we have a question-and-answer session in the second half, and we take quite a lot of questions. Jonathan collects the cards and the questions, and he doesn't tell me. He likes to spring them on me, so he tries to pick one or two that that try and get me. But, look, that's the beauty of it, and I don't mind. I don't want to know what's coming. I like to be spontaneous. I don't want the show to be staged. So I'm never quite sure how the first or second half is going to go, and that's the beauty of it. I have a great relationship with him, and I think BBC are lucky as well as him. They've got a guy who's dropped into a slot of doing the radio cricket that's perfect for it. He's got a good sense of humour. He played cricket. And he was a goodish bowler. He's not here, I'll tell him that now. Although he wasn't so good when he got Greenwich out at the Oval in a test match, and then Viv got 270. I think he got one for 130. I keep reminding him of that. But yes, I think he's interested in the job he does. He has a nice manner, but he's quite prepared to put the sharp questions. But he can put it in a nicer manner than maybe I would. And so I think he gets away with getting good interviews. I think he's just dropped on his feet into a slot that suits him. So I enjoy him. It's good fun. And he's got his own mind. Oh, yes, he has. He comes back at me, but I'm ready for him too.
And finally, Geoffrey, how much do you enjoy commentary and being in the commentary box? I know nothing beats being out in the middle, but is it as close as you can get?
Well, I've loved cricket all my life. 25 years playing. I've done 25 in my 26-year commentating, and I love it. If I didn't, I wouldn't turn up. I'd just say, fine, thank you. I did television most of the time till I went on TalkSport Radio a bit and then BBC, and it was Rachel who said, go on radio. I said, really? I mean, it was always treated as the second best. Television, such a big medium, we all watch it and we can see pictures. But the great thing about radio, she said, it'll give you time to express your views, stories, anecdotes, because I'm lucky, I can remember lots of things. I remember nearly every innings I played, who got me out, where they got me out, was it a good ball, was it a daft shot? So it does allow you to explore and to explain and to get some humour in, where television, I really was schooled a little bit by Jim Laker and Richie Benno when I first started, who said Richie's view was always, look, people can see what's happening on television. Don't state the obvious too often. Try and give them something that enhances their viewing. So if you Richie, why he was loved, he used words sparingly, put it that way, didn't he? He made them count. He didn't waffle on. And that made him a unique and special person, commentator. So try to do that on television. But on radio, you need to talk. Because you're talking, nobody can see anything. And if you don't say anything, there's nothing. There's a blank space. And what the hell's happened, everybody says. So you have to speak. You have to be able to. And I think the biggest test is when there's rain. Because you've no cricket going on then. You better be able to remember some important anecdotes, some moments, some special things that happened in life and seeing other people play as well as yourself. So I really, really enjoy it.